This is Audible.
Christian Audio presents Love Defined, Embracing God's Vision for Lasting Love and Satisfying Relationships. Written and read by Kristen Clark and Bethany Baird. To our amazing parents, Mike and Heidi, your investment in our lives has shaped us into the women we are today. We love you. Kristen and Bethany. To my husband, Zach, thank you for showing me the beauty and power of Christ-centered love. Kristen. Part 1. Happily Ever Disaster. Chapter 1. Love, you are oh so complicated. The clock read 4:21 p.m. In exactly 9 minutes, my life would change forever. This was the day I, Kristen, had dreamed of for 24 years. Standing in the bridal suite, I gently adjusted my floor-length veil and white wedding dress. Up until this point, the day had been a crazy blur. Last-minute venue prep, steaming my wedding dress, applying waterproof mascara, trying to get my straight hair to stay curled. Oh, and helping a bridesmaid who ironed a hole in the front of her dress. The day was in fast motion. Every minute flashed past as quickly as I blinked. Until now. The bridesmaids were out of the room, the moms were being seated, my dad was waiting nervously right outside the bridal suite door. For the first time all day, the room was quiet. Everyone was gone except for one person, Bethany. This girl was my best friend, my maid of honor, my adventure partner for the past 2 decades, my sister. Standing across from each other, we silently soaked in this moment as time stood still. And then, without warning, Bethany did the unthinkable. With my makeup finished and the touch-up powder out of reach, she burst into tears. And that's all it took for me. After I burst into tears myself, both of us stood there crying and laughing. "I can't believe you're making me cry right before I walk down the aisle," I said, laughing. Scrambling for some tissues, she laughed through her tears and said, "Sorry, it just all hit me. I can't believe you're about to get married. Things will literally never be the same again." "I know," I said, dabbing my cheeks. "It's crazy. I honestly thought this day would never come. And now here we are."
"No kidding," Bethany replied. "You're actually getting married to an amazing guy. I guess that means there's hope for the rest of us single girls."
Putting her hand on my shoulder, Bethany smiled warmly and said,
"Seriously, Kristen, I'm really excited for you. This is an incredible day. God is so good, and Zach is perfect for you."
"Okay, don't make me cry again," I said, fanning my eyes. This special moment as we embraced in a long sister hug was one neither of us would ever forget. And with that, our dad knocked on the door and said,
"Time to go, girls."
But first, heartbreak. As beautiful and romantic as my wedding day was, my relationship journey wasn't always picture perfect. 4.5 years before Zach and I got married, I went through one of the hardest breakups of my life.
"Look, you're not supposed to know this, but Ryan's shopping for rings,"
Bethany said to me in an excited whisper. "What?" I asked with huge eyes. "Seriously? How?"
"I can't tell you anymore,"
Bethany said.
"Just make sure your nails are looking good over the next few weeks."
I was surprised by this news, but not shocked. Ryan and I had been seriously getting to know each other for 6 months. Deep in my heart, I truly believed he was the one. So this is what true love feels like. My parents and siblings loved Ryan. Well, most of my siblings. And even though we came from completely different types of families and backgrounds, we shared a lot of common interests. Even though our relationship had endured some rocky patches, we seemed to be pushing forward. He loved Jesus. I loved Jesus. We got along great. We enjoyed each other's company. What else did we need? At 20 years old, I thought I was getting off easy in the love department. How awesome would it be to get married now and avoid the drama of single life, I thought. Confident I had found the one, I figured a little wedding research would be harmless. With my head in the clouds, I turned on my computer and searched for wedding dresses. Little did I know that exactly 1 week from this point, I would be flying away on a plane with a shattered heart. The next few days turned out to be some of the hardest in my entire life. My dream world came crashing down before my eyes. Although my relationship with Ryan looked great on the outside,
It was covered with red flags. He and I had convinced ourselves we were perfect for each other, but we weren't. Not in reality. My infatuation with Ryan had blinded me to the many issues and problems in our relationship. And sadly, Ryan's rough past wasn't as much of his past as it was his present. After a lengthy conversation with my parents, my fears were confirmed. Getting married to Ryan would be an extremely unwise decision. As this realization flooded my mind, I burst into tears. I cried that entire night. I cried that entire next day. Bethany and I even cried together. It was painfully hard. After Ryan and I broke up, I desperately wanted to get away for a little while. I needed time to think, to pray, to breathe. I hopped on a plane with Bethany to go visit our grandparents in Chicago. As the plane took off early the next morning, I honestly wondered if I would ever be able to love again. He loves me, he loves me not. 1 year after Kristen's heartbreak with Ryan, I, Bethany, met an amazing guy named Justin. I was falling hard for this guy. The chemistry was instant. He was funny, tall, good-looking, easygoing, and he loved Jesus. What more could a girl want? Justin and I met through some mutual friends. His personality was everything I had ever imagined in a future husband. Our growing interest in each other was becoming obvious to everyone around us. With my parents on board and excited about our relationship, Justin and I began getting to know each other more intentionally. As a 19-year-old girl, I couldn't believe how my life was panning out. I had always wanted to get married young, and with Justin being several years older, it seemed like the perfect love story. My head was in the clouds, my heart was on fire. After several more months of getting to know Justin, I just knew. He's the one. He's totally the one. Up until this point in life, I had never been in a serious relationship. Crushes, yes, lots of them. But never a real relationship like this one. I had never met a guy like Justin. I had never been friends with a guy who I genuinely wanted to marry. Until now, Justin changed everything. Over the next few weeks, things continued ramping up. Justin began meeting with my dad for some good guy-to-guy chats. Even though Justin was a fairly new Christian, he was anxious to grow in his relationship with God. I loved his passion for theology. I loved his desire to know the Bible. He seemed perfect in every way. The fairy tale movies I had watched as a little girl were coming to life right before my eyes. This love thing is so easy. And then, out of nowhere, my entire world came crashing down. We need to talk. Those were the four little words that popped up on my phone. I quickly clicked on Justin's text message. My heart started pounding. Something wasn't right. Our text messages were always surrounded by hearts and smiley faces. This text was plain, to the point, no fluff. After texting back and forth for several minutes, my phone rang. It was Justin. "I hate to do this by phone," he said with a sad tone. "But since I'll be gone on my business trip for the next week," he paused. "Well, I just need to tell you what I'm really thinking." The next 30 minutes were a shock and a blur. Justin told me that he really liked me, but had come to realize we wouldn't work long term. He explained that his interest in God wasn't as strong as it seemed. He confessed that he didn't genuinely share the same convictions as he had led me to believe. He told me his life would be going in a very different direction from this point on. After what seemed like forever, this awful phone call finally ended. With my heart crushed and my dreams pulverized, I hung up the phone. I cried for the next 3 weeks. Love wasn't all that simple, after all. Love and romance are complicated. If there's one thing the two of us have learned over the past decade, it's this. Romantic relationships are complicated. Those charming little princess movies we watched as kids didn't do either of us any favors as we grew older. Our simplistic view of love and romance was quickly shocked into reality. As teen girls, we faced new challenges regularly. Is it okay to tell this guy I like him? How do I get this cute guy to notice me? Is dating around okay? Is it possible to be just friends with a guy? What if my best friend likes the same guy as I do? How do I guard my heart? What about flirting? Physical boundaries? Late night phone calls? We had a lot of questions. Our parents and others wisely helped us work through these issues, but it wasn't easy. And then we grew a little older and everything changed again. What qualities are important in a future husband? How do I set God-honoring boundaries? What are the non-negotiables? How do I know if he's the one? What do red flags look like? How do I stay content when all my friends are getting married? Question after question, situation after situation, year after year. Despite our childhood fantasies, we quickly learned that there wasn't a one-size-fits-all mold. Navigating romance and relationships wasn't as simple as Hollywood made it seem. The fact that you're listening to this audiobook probably means you've experienced some complications too. We're guessing you've asked similar questions, faced similar challenges, experienced some form of heartache, wrestled through singleness, wondered if God's word had anything to say. Sister, you're not alone. We've been there. Others have been there. It's tough. Navigating the waters of love isn't a piece of cake. And it doesn't help that modern culture is feeding us conflicting messages about how to navigate best. The movies tell us to follow our hearts. Love songs tell us to find the one. And our friends give us all sorts of random advice. A 23-year-old single woman named Chelsea wrote to us expressing her struggle in this area. It's so hard to know what's right anymore when it comes to romantic relationships. The culture around me is throwing its view on me every day, and I'm not even sure what to think anymore. Can you relate? Whether you're 18 or well past your 30s, you've probably experienced the confusion and complication associated with romantic love in some form or another. And if you haven't, you've probably experienced the longings and struggles of being single. If you're anything like the two of us, you've wondered if there's a better way, a wiser way, a God-honoring way. In short, there is. There is a much better way. Thankfully, the creator of the universe didn't leave us hanging when it comes to our love lives.
Why rewrote this audiobook? Instead of offering you a new dating program or an ABC solution to finding the one, the two of us want to offer you a biblical approach for true love and lasting relationships. It's pretty clear that modern methods for pursuing romance and relationships aren't working. We need something better, something smarter, something lasting. The two of us are calling a timeout in the modern game of love and declaring, enough is enough. Hollywood, we're calling your bluff. Unless we as Christian women break free from our modern culture's broken view of love, we will continue to struggle down the same miserable path. Over the past decade, the two of us have opened God's word and discovered a radically better approach to love and relationships. An approach that places Christ at the center of our love lives. Despite your current season of life, we are confident that God's word has specific and helpful answers for you. After all, God designed love and marriage, so he would know how to navigate it best. Whether you're single and struggling to stay content, involved in a confusing relationship and need clarity, trying to guard your heart and stay pure, or wondering how to navigate the path to marriage successfully, God's word has answers. Regardless of why you picked up this audiobook, we want you to know that the Bible has practical, applicable, and insightful wisdom for helping you navigate your love life, all for God's glory. Throughout the chapters of this audiobook, you will discover a biblical approach for true love and lasting relationships, God's spectacular design for love, marriage, and sex, what it takes to build a strong foundation now for your future marriage, practical insights for successfully navigating the path to marriage, how to live a life of purpose, intention, and satisfaction as a single woman, essential qualities to look for in a future husband, how to build a Christ-centered love story that lasts, and much more. The two of us aren't experts on the topic of love. We aren't relationship gurus or professional matchmakers, although we have had some success. But we know the one who is. And as we've applied his truths to our lives, we've learned how to trust Christ more deeply and find our total satisfaction in him. When Christ took center stage in our love lives, everything changed. If you're tired of riding the waves of infatuation, crashing on the shores of heartache, and struggling down the road of confusion, join us on this new journey. a journey to discovering God's beautiful and incredible design for true love and lasting relationships. Say hello to love defined by God.
Chapter 1 Study Guide. Regardless of your current season of life, we are confident that God's Word has specific and helpful answers for you. 1. In what ways have you experienced complications when it comes to love and romance? 2. Which of the following questions have you asked yourself? Is it okay to tell this guy I like him? How do I get this cute guy to notice me? Is dating around okay? Is it possible to be just friends with guys? What if my best friend likes the same guy as I do? How do I guard my heart? What about flirting? Physical boundaries? Late night phone calls? What qualities are important in a future husband? How do I set God-honoring boundaries? What are the non-negotiables? How do I know if he's the one? What do red flags look like? How do I stay content when all my friends are getting married? 3. What has been most influential in shaping your current view of love and romance? Movies, music, novels, friends, parents, church, God's Word, etc. 4. What are 3 things you're hoping to learn by listening to this audiobook? Make it personal. Let's start things off right. Take a moment to stop and pray. Ask God to help you have an open heart and mind as you seek to embrace His vision for lasting love and satisfying relationships. Chapter 2, Seeing Through the Fairy Tale Facade. I, Bethany, couldn't believe my eyes. Was that really Jacob Wood and Caitlin Martin walking into the conference building together, holding hands? I grabbed my cell phone and immediately dialed up Kristen. Guess who I just saw walking into the conference, I blurted into the phone.
I have absolutely no idea,
Kristen said, confused. Come on, think for a second, I replied. This is big, like Prince Charles and Princess Diana big. Then Kristen knew exactly who I was talking about.
No way. You've got to be kidding me. Jacob and Caitlin? I thought they broke up years ago.
I guess history has a way of repeating itself, I said half-jokingly. Okay, gotta run. The opening session is about to start. As I sat down in the auditorium, I couldn't help but stare at Jacob and Caitlin. They looked like the perfect pair. I didn't have to watch long to notice how completely infatuated they were with each other. The way he stroked her hair, the way she smiled at him, the way they looked into each other's eyes. Over the next 6 months, I watched Jacob and Caitlin fall head over heels for each other. Jacob treated Caitlin like a princess and won her heart quickly. Any conflicts that arose were quickly overshadowed by Jacob's smooth words and sweet kisses. He guaranteed Caitlin that she was his girl. He was done playing the field. He was done messing around. He was ready for real life. He was ready to focus on her. At least, that's what he said. On a brisk October evening, under a starry night sky, Jacob got down on one knee and asked Caitlin to become his wife. With tears in her eyes and a heart full of innocent joy, she said, "I couldn't imagine marrying anyone else but you. Yes!" Less than 3 months later, this Hollywood-worthy couple tied the knot. I wish their story ended there. I wish I could say they lived happily ever after, but they didn't. Little did anybody know how heartbreaking the next few years would be. Before I share the end of their story, let's jump back in time to get some background on what led them to this point. I grew up with Jacob and Caitlin. Although I wasn't best friends with them, we hung out here and there during high school. Caitlin was drop-dead gorgeous, naive, and a little new to her Christian faith. Jacob was smart, good with words, popular, and a little too handsome for his own good. Jacob was a ladies' man, and he knew it. All the girls knew it, too. Well, all the girls except for Caitlin, that is. Jacob and Caitlin dated for a few months during their sophomore year of high school. Jacob was completely enamored by Caitlin's gorgeous looks. Unfortunately, after the initial excitement wore off, his interest slowly wore off, too. He was ready for something new, something different, something fresh. Without giving it a second thought, Jacob texted Caitlin and said, "Hey, I need to move on. I just don't love you anymore." The text totally caught Caitlin off guard. She was shocked and confused. She wondered what had gone wrong. Why had he dumped her? Even though Jacob had ditched Caitlin abruptly, she never quite got over him. She missed him. She wanted him back. She wanted her hand to be in his. She wanted to feel the way she had felt when he had told people she was his girlfriend. It didn't matter to her that he had bounced from one girlfriend to the next after dating her. She desperately wanted him back. After several years, Jacob became interested in Caitlin once again. Seeing his interest return made her heart run wild. All her old feelings went into full throttle. She assumed her intense passion for Jacob was a sign of true love. Hand in hand with Jacob once again, Caitlin felt like her life was a perfect fairy tale. And this takes us back to where I started their story at the beginning of this chapter. Let's pick up right after their wedding. After Jacob and Caitlin got married, I honestly believed their relationship would work out. I naively assumed their good looks and intense passion would be enough to carry their marriage long term. I assumed Jacob would transform into a mature, faithful, pure, and godly man. I thought Caitlin would instantly become a wise and mature Christian woman. Unfortunately, marriage has a way of exposing sin, not erasing it. 3 years after Jacob and Caitlin got married, the unthinkable happened. I'll never forget the look on Caitlin's face as she walked into the restaurant where we were meeting. "He left me," she muttered. With her mascara running down her face and tears overflowing into her hands, she said, "He left me for another woman." I couldn't believe my ears. I thought marriages were supposed to just work out. I thought young couples as popular and gorgeous as Jacob and Caitlin were somehow above disaster. I thought her good looks would keep a guy no matter what. I thought life would be great for them. It was through their tragic relationship that my eyes were opened to the devastating effects of an infatuation-based marriage. I quickly learned that it takes a lot more than good looks and passion to maintain long-term love. Unlike the movies, this fairy tale story didn't end with the happily ever after. This was real life, and it was awful. A sad realization. We wish Caitlin's story was a rare exception, but it's not. As the two of us entered our early 20s, we quickly realized that most modern relationships were not thriving. Heartache, pain, struggle, and divorce were quickly becoming common realities for those around us. Instead of watching our peers get married and live contented lives, we watched many of their marriages end in divorce. It's no secret that we, as modern women, live in a relationally broken generation. With the divorce rate pushing the 50% mark, many of us are experiencing this brokenness firsthand. Whether it's your own love life, your parents' marriage, or a friend's relationship, you've probably seen the devastation. Recently, I, Kristen, had a conversation with a group of single girls. It seemed as though every one of them had experienced something difficult or painful regarding their own romantic relationships. One girl revealed the brokenness she had experienced when her boyfriend unexpectedly broke up with her to chase after a different girl. Another girl shared about the guilt she'd been feeling since losing her virginity to her ex-boyfriend. Another one told of the confusion she was facing as a result of dating a non-Christian coworker. Despite the obvious heartache and dysfunction that we, as single women, experience, romantic relationships don't seem to be improving. In fact, it seems as though they are continuing to become more miserable, painful, and broken. Like a snowball growing bigger as it rolls down a hill, relational devastation seems to be growing bigger with each passing year. The fairy tale facade. When the two of us were in our late teens, we honestly believed that relationships would just work themselves out. We never really stopped to consider what makes a relationship truly successful. We figured that if two people had sparks and chemistry when they got married, then the relationship would last. But watching Jacob and Caitlin's relationship crumble caused us to stop and question our perspectives. It made us reconsider our definition of true love and our idea of a lasting relationship. In the weeks that followed Jacob and Caitlin's divorce, the two of us realized that we had been living with the false understanding of love. We naively assumed that somehow couples could thrive on infatuation, sparks, and chemistry for a lifetime. We had unintentionally believed that modern couples could define love according to their own terms and still have lasting results.
This false view of love is a direct result of what we call the fairy tale facade. The fairy tale facade is like a beautiful false front. From the outside, it looks really good. Imagine a temporary front covering on the outside of an old, ugly building. The exterior looks great, but behind the false front is nothing more than a wreck. The fairy tale facade promotes the idea that we can completely ignore God's design for love, sex, and romance, and still have lasting, satisfying results. It's the idea that Hollywood can define love according to its own terms and still create happily ever afters. It's the false belief that we can ignore the Creator's perfect plan for our lives and still achieve complete satisfaction apart from His design. Despite all the lofty promises the fairy tale facade offers, it's nothing more than a false front. Instead of blindly buying into the fairy tale facade, we, as Christian women, need to stop and evaluate its results. We need to take a serious look at the status of modern relationships and see what's truly working and what's not. We need to open our eyes, ask good questions, and look at real statistics. We need to get behind the false front and acknowledge the rubble. The fairy tale facade can be exposed only if we're willing to be honest with the reality of modern relationships. We need to stop and ask some pointed questions. If Hollywood's version of true love works so well in the movies, then why doesn't it work in real life? If adultery is portrayed as free of consequences in TV shows, then why is it incredibly painful in real life? If sex outside of marriage seems to bring such great satisfaction in chick flicks, then why does it leave us empty and needing more in real life? If one-night stands are so fun and thrilling, then why do they leave us so miserable? If lasting love is defined by two beautiful people falling in love, then why is divorce so rampant? When we, as modern women, answer those questions honestly, we quickly realize the deception of the fairy tale facade. We clearly see how unrealistic and short-sighted culture-defined love truly is. Bad guys don't simply turn good when they get the girl. Naughty girls don't just turn nice when they get the guy. Adultery isn't cute and sweet. Seduction doesn't bring trust. One-night stands aren't consequence-free. Sex outside of marriage comes with baggage. Divorce has lasting consequences. The list goes on. Despite the way Hollywood continually tries to convince us that true love can be found apart from God, the two of us aren't buying it. We've seen the fairy tale facade leave too many women disillusioned and empty. We're done with the false front. We're done buying into its empty promises. We're done accepting the way it glamorizes sin. We're done sitting back while it tries to hijack God's design. We're calling it out for what it truly is, false.
Exposing Hollywood's track record. Without even realizing it, the two of us used to believe the lie that Hollywood had the solutions for lasting love and thriving relationships. From the outside, it appeared as though most actors and actresses had perfectly functional love lives. It seemed as if they had discovered the secret to true love that average people could not attain. The magazines often portrayed their lives in a perfect light. However, when we dug below the surface, we discovered that this portrayal of perfection couldn't have been further from the truth. Some of the most famous actors and actresses had some of the most dysfunctional relationships. Their real lives were often the exact opposite of the happy characters they played in the movies. In light of this reality, we decided to do some in-depth research on a few of the most famous modern celebrities. Unfortunately, the research went quickly and the results were repetitive. Short marriages, followed by quick divorces, seemed to be the trend among the superstars we researched. In fact, we discovered that the marriages of elite celebrities in our society have an even higher divorce rate than the average person. Despite these celebrities' wealth, beauty, and fame, lasting love seems harder for them to hold on to. One website reported that celebrity divorces are so prevalent that it's impossible to keep up unless you work for TMZ or spend all day reading about shocking splits in gossip magazines. While the national divorce rate rests between 40 and 50%, celebrities seem to change their spouses almost as often as they change their sheets. Sadly, the celebrities we most idolize as relational experts often have the most broken track records. the UK Daily Mail came out with an article shedding light on this topic. The famous may dazzle us with their $100,000 fairy story weddings, 15-tier cakes, and horse-drawn carriages. But all too often, these weddings are followed in quick succession by a bitter and torturous fallout and divorce played out in the public eye in grisly detail. As modern women, we often look to our favorite celebrity idols and wish we had their lives. We become mesmerized by the fame and glamour. But in reality, the fairy tale lives they appear to be living are nothing more than a facade. The glamour is nothing more than a false front. Beyond the red carpet, camera flashes, and sparkly clothes, their lives are often a revolving door of hookups, breakups, and relational brokenness. We must wake up to this reality and acknowledge that Hollywood doesn't have the answers to lasting relationships. Our celebrity idols aren't experiencing truly vibrant marriages. The methods they're using for finding and maintaining relationships aren't working. However, despite the lack of relational success in Hollywood, we as Christian women often embrace the exact same methods. Without questioning anything, we run down the same broken path. Why do we do this? Because Hollywood's method is the most popular one out there. It's the default method for modern relationships. The two of us have decided to call this broken method the merry-go-round method for modern relationships. In the next chapter, we're going to explore exactly what this method is and why it's leaving us on an endless cycle of heartache. Chapter 2 Study Guide. The fairy tale facade promotes the idea that we can completely ignore God's design for love, sex, and romance and still have lasting, satisfying results. 1. In your own words, describe the fairy tale facade. 2. In what ways have you seen the fairy tale facade negatively affect you or people you know? 3. Think about which of the following statements you've seen play out in real life. Bad guys don't simply turn good when they get the girl. Naughty girls don't just turn nice when they get the guy. Adultery isn't cute and sweet. Seduction doesn't bring trust. One-night stands aren't consequence-free. Sex outside of marriage comes with baggage. Divorce has lasting consequences. 4. Why do you think good looks and romantic passion aren't enough to sustain a relationship long-term? 5. If Hollywood's version of true love works so well in the movies, then why doesn't it work in real life? Make it personal. Search your heart and ask God to show you any lies you've believed about the fairy tale facade. Finish each of the following sentences in your own words. I've believed the lie that. I've believed the lie that. I've believed the lie that. Chapter 3. The Merry-Go-Round Method for Modern Relationships. The bright lights and flashing signs of the theme park were a welcome sight to us and our excited group of friends. While I, Bethany, was busy dreaming about the big boat that swings through the water, Kristen was leading our little group toward her favorite ride, the spinning wheel. Within minutes, Kristen spotted the ride and excitedly jumped in line to spin her brains out. I stood against a nearby wall, dreading the thought of getting on this ridiculous ride. Who in their right mind would want to spend 4 solid minutes in a spinning torture chamber, I thought to myself. The ride started, and I soon heard the laughter and screams of Kristen and our friends. After what seemed like a lifetime, the bell rang and the ride slowly came to a halt. I watched Kristen and her friends dizzily stumble toward me, panting for breath and laughing. Kristen grabbed my hand and started pulling me toward the line. You've got to try it, Kristen said determined. It's so much fun, and it doesn't even make you feel dizzy. Why I said yes, I'll never know. Bottom line, the spinning wheel was awful. I hated it from the first spin around to the very last. I felt sick for the rest of the day. I will never, ever, even to this very day, get on a spinning ride again. I learned my lesson the hard way, and I'm not making that mistake again. Never-ending spinning. When the two of us look at our culture's method for modern romance, we see a lot of parallels between it and the crazy spinning ride. From the outside, everything looks fun and exciting. The lights are bright, the laughter is loud, and the screams are abundant. Everyone, well, almost everyone, is spinning around having the time of their life. And then the ride stops. The nauseated passengers stumble toward the exit, wondering if the ride was worth it. Our culture's method for relationships has a way of doing the exact same thing. Like the nauseated passengers who go around in circles, we as modern single women hop on board a similar relationship ride. We spin in repetitive circles and wonder why we reap nauseating results. We stumble out of one romance and into another, hoping for something more. But nothing changes. Confused and disoriented, we continue getting back in line for another crazy ride. Just like the spinning wheel, a merry-go-round is designed to turn in constant circles. The ride goes around and around, creating a similar spinning experience as the wheel. If a rider doesn't like the merry-go-round experience, she should jump off. She should try a new ride that operates in a completely different way. Simply moving from a spinning amusement park ride to a playground merry-go-round won't change the experience. She's still spinning around. Same routine, different seat. Just like a merry-go-round and the spinning wheel, the merry-go-round method for modern relationships works the same way. It's a never-ending cycle of spinning. This method is the most popular out there. It's the one Hollywood encourages. It's the one we hear idolized in popular music. It's the default method for most single people today. It's the method you are probably using right now or will use in the future. The primary goal of the merry-go-round method is rooted in and fueled by a desire to please self. This method is motivated by personal happiness. It isn't driven by a desire to bring God glory, but rather a desire to satisfy ourselves. The goal of the merry-go-round method equals personal happiness. When personal happiness becomes our greatest pursuit in a romantic relationship, all our decisions will be driven by that motivation. Our focus is on getting what we want when we want it, rather than on glorifying God. The merry-go-round method for modern relationships is built on a 5-step process. It starts with step 1, which we're about to dig into, and works its way to step 5. We as modern women often hop on this relationship merry-go-round in hopes of finding our happily ever after ending. We start the relationship ride by finding a good-looking dude. Then we chase after him until we catch his eye. After we've caught him, we begin coasting on infatuation and feelings. As the relationship progresses, we count on our guy to satisfy all our needs. If at any point we find ourselves unhappy or dissatisfied, we just assume we have the wrong guy. We must be riding around with the wrong dude. Instead of hopping off the merry-go-round, we look at the available options and start the process all over again. Around and around we go. We're going to unpack the 5-step process of the merry-go-round method for modern relationships. We are going to explore how it works in real life. As you listen to the steps, see if you can relate to any of them. Have you ever unknowingly followed this method and ended up on the crazy merry-go-round? Let's jump into step 1.
Step 1, catch the right guy. Girlfriend, it's time to start hunting. The perfect guy is out there. You just need to catch him. Get out of your comfort zone and get on the hunt. Do whatever it takes to catch the dude who will satisfy you. If you can find your soulmate, he will complete you and make you perfectly happy. He will be your Prince Charming, your knight in shining armor, your happiness maker. He will be everything you've ever dreamed of. You just need to focus on catching his eye and capturing his heart. According to modern culture, this is the first step toward a lasting romantic relationship. You must first catch the right guy. Until you catch your man, you won't be truly happy. You need to keep your eyes open at all times. Just think. He could be the barista at your favorite coffee shop. He could be the waiter who serves you dinner at a local restaurant. He could be the new trainer at your gym. He could even be the guy jogging in your neighborhood who just happens to wave as you drive by. He could be anywhere. You must keep your eyes open. Back in high school, I, Kristen, worked so hard to catch who I thought was the right guy for me. I was sure that if I could catch him, I would be totally satisfied. I believed he was the missing piece to my puzzle. I thought I needed him to be happy. I worked ridiculously hard to catch that guy's eye. Like a natural pro, I pulled out all the stops. To my delight, my moves worked. He noticed me. This guy and I eventually exchanged phone numbers, and I was feeling like the woman.
I soaked up the attention he gave me and thrived knowing I was on his mind. Life felt wonderful, at least for that moment. If you've caught the right guy in the merry-go-round, you're ready for step two.
Step two, coast on infatuation. You're standing in line at your local bakery when the unimaginable happens. The cute guy behind the counter smiles at you in a way that says, "Hey, baby, I'm your dreamboat." Your knees weaken and your mouth goes dry. It's obvious that you've just experienced love at first sight. Without hesitation, you mentally start planning your wedding with this bakery hot rod. This is the next step toward your happily ever after. Let your emotions run wild. Obviously, the chemistry between you and this guy is a clear indication that you're meant to be. It doesn't matter that he's 20 years older than you. It doesn't matter that he's working part-time hours and still living in his parents' basement. It doesn't matter that he's using all his free time to play video games. None of that matters. The only thing that matters is the chemistry between the two of you. Right here, right now. You just need to coast on that infatuation. It will take you to your destiny. It will lead you to your soulmate. Oh, and make sure you ignore the wisdom and advice of those around you. They aren't you. They don't understand the chemistry and sparks happening in your heart. Ignore any cautions or red flags they might bring up. Infatuation must be your compass for navigating your heart. Despite how silly some of this may sound, it's what modern culture encourages single women to do. We are encouraged to make important romantic decisions while dazed by infatuation. Wisdom and discernment are non-factors when it comes to the life-altering decision of marriage. The emotions are strong. The chemistry is cranked up. Everything seems perfect in the moment. The way many researchers describe this brain state, infatuation, overall, is an idealization of the one you love. You focus on the strengths, many of which might be imaginary, and are blind to weaknesses, many of which are readily apparent to outside observers. You idealize this person to make them the kind of person you want them to be. It should be clear that if you're in this state, you're in no position to make an objective choice if you rely on your feelings. This blinding state of infatuation is exactly what we see playing out in modern romantic relationships. I, Bethany, was infatuated with a guy in high school. I was crazily obsessed with him. I was convinced that anyone who offered me counsel was simply out of touch with reality. I didn't want my parents' advice. I didn't want Kristen's advice. I didn't even care if the wisdom offered to me was true. I was head over heels for this guy and wanted everyone else to enthusiastically like him too. Hindsight is always 20/20, right? Of course, I can now clearly see how blinded I was by my infatuation for this guy. I had built him up to be a modern-day William Wallace. Nothing could change my perspective. I was sold on him. Although it's estimated that infatuation typically lasts between 12 and 18 months, I definitely outdid the average with this guy. My infatuation really didn't begin to subside until the 2-year mark. After 2 years, I finally began to see this guy with a clear head. I began to see him for who he truly was, not who I had imagined him to be. Coasting on infatuation is a crucial step in the merry-go-round method. Once you've hunted down your man and coasted on infatuation, you're ready for step three.
Step three, concentrate on your feelings. Now that infatuation has set in, it's time to concentrate on your feelings. At this stage in the relationship, your feelings will be your best source of truth. If you feel good about the relationship, continue moving forward. You can determine if you're in love with your man simply by how you feel about him. When it comes to the merry-go-round method, concentrating on your feelings is a must-have step. According to modern culture, your feelings will be the deciding factor for who you should or shouldn't be with. If it feels right, just do it. That's your motto and your guide. This motto is everywhere, so you should count on it to work for you. I, Kristen, read an article that interviewed a famous country singer about one of his past divorces. The country singer said that he knew his previous marriage was over when his feelings began to transfer to a different woman. His feelings were his guide, and they were indicating to him that a different woman was his new soulmate. There was no talk of commitment, faithfulness, or self-restraint. The article made it clear that his heart was speaking and he needed to follow it. So, with a quick stroke of a pen, he signed the divorce papers and moved on to a new woman. This is the world that we as modern women live in. We're told feelings are the defining and guiding factors that should lead us.
We're told to follow your heart and do what feels right. Our feelings are the roadmap for our love lives. If we follow them, they will lead us to our destiny. Toward the end of my senior year in high school, I, Kristen, met a cute guy and quickly progressed to step three in the merry-go-round method. This guy and I had serious chemistry. Despite the obvious problematic differences between the two of us, I was concentrating on my feelings, and they were telling me this relationship was right. I liked him. He liked me. We were meant to be. In step three of the merry-go-round method, there is no voice of wisdom or reason. Personal feelings are king when it comes to love and romance. Any concerns, red flags, or outside wisdom should be discarded if your feelings confirm your direction. Once you've hunted down your man, coasted on infatuation, and concentrated on your feelings, you will be ready for step four.
Step four, count on him to satisfy you. You finally found your dream man. This guy has to be your soulmate. He's the one destined to satisfy all your needs. He's your Prince Charming. He should make you feel like a queen at all times. Your job is simply to count on him to satisfy you. Go ahead and place all your hopes, expectations, and desires onto his shoulders. If he's your true love, he will make you happy at all times. According to step four in the merry-go-round method of modern relationships, a guy's entire purpose is to make his girl's life better. He exists to bring her happiness, to make her feel secure, to meet all her needs, to read her mind and to know what she wants without her having to tell him. It's his entire job to satisfy her, and he better do it well. When it comes to modern relationships, single women are taught to view guys as their happiness makers. We don't even realize it, but this step is ingrained into our brains. He better make me happy. He better satisfy me. He better know when to bring me flowers and chocolate. Dark chocolate, that is. He better know how to cheer me up when I'm frustrated. He better be the most thoughtful man at all times. A friend of ours named Kendra recently shared about how she had thoroughly applied step four to her relationship. On her and her boyfriend's first Valentine's Day as a couple, Kendra had high expectations. She wanted him to go above and beyond and treat her like royalty. She wanted roses and special gifts. She wanted constant doting. She wanted him to anticipate her every desire and satisfy them with precision. Just imagine her reaction when the day didn't go according to her perfect plan. She was devastated. It didn't matter that her boyfriend had tried his best to make the day meaningful and special. Kendra's expectations had been shattered. She did what any devastated woman would do in a situation like that. She threw a big girl tantrum. She let him know how sad, disappointed, and frustrated she was. He was supposed to be her happiness maker, not her expectation dasher. Once you fully embrace step four, you will be at the pro level on the merry-go-round method. At this point, you are ready to move on to step five.
Step five, cry when it fails, then go back to the beginning and do it all again. If at any point in the merry-go-round method, you stop feeling in love with your guy, call it quits. If your infatuation wears off, end it. If your feelings change, look for romance somewhere else. If he doesn't satisfy your every need and meet all your expectations, say goodbye. End the relationship the moment he stops making you completely happy. Apparently, he wasn't your soulmate after all. It will be painful, so go ahead and cry as much as you need to. Sadly, this final step is almost always inevitable. However, according to our culture, there is still a bit of good news at this point in the process. Once you've cried enough tears and recovered from your heartbreak, just go back to step one again. Simply start the process over. Start hunting for a new man, because the guy you were with obviously wasn't the right one. It's time to hop back on the merry-go-round method and start working through the steps once again. Step one, catch the right guy. Step two, coast on infatuation. Step three, concentrate on your feelings. Step four, count on him to satisfy you. Step five, cry when it fails. Maybe this time around, or the one after that, you will actually find your true love. Just keep circling around because it may take 5, 6, or even 7 times until you find your perfect match. And even if the relationship does result in marriage, the merry-go-round method will be there for you if things don't work out. So start preparing now for a lifelong, nauseating ride on the merry-go-round. The method that rules the relationship world. So there you have it, the 5-step method that rules the modern relationship world. If you keep an eye out for the merry-go-round method, you'll notice it everywhere. It's in pop music, it's in popular movies, it's in reality TV shows, it's on social media. It's the foundation for your friends' relationships. Since this method permeates almost everything in modern culture, many of us have adopted it by default. Looking back on some of our earlier relationships, we, Bethany and Kristen, unknowingly embraced certain aspects of the merry-go-round method. The culture had impacted our thinking more than we had realized. As expected, the merry-go-round method didn't serve us well. It didn't help us find the satisfaction we longed for. It didn't help us keep Christ at the center of our romances. The reason this method produces such bad results is because it's primarily rooted in one thing, self-centeredness. The merry-go-round method is an all-about-me method. My happiness, my fulfillment, my satisfaction, my pleasure, my rules, my way. Until we as modern women intentionally choose a Christ-centered approach, we will continue spinning in never-ending, nauseating circles.
Jumping off the merry-go-round. When we realized how broken the merry-go-round method was, we knew something had to change. We didn't like the results it was producing in our lives. We didn't like how self-focused and self-absorbed our romantic pursuits had become. Instead of continuing to ride the merry-go-round, we realized that we could choose something better. We could approach relationships in a completely different way. As we studied what God's word had to say about love, we realized the merry-go-round method isn't built on a biblical foundation. It's nothing more than a cheap imitation of God's good plan. So, without looking back, we decided to jump off the merry-go-round. We'll unpack more about God-defined love in the chapters to come. As the two of us have strived to embrace God's design for true love and romance, we have been able to navigate relationships in a much more God-honoring way. The more our hearts have changed from being self-focused to Christ-focused, the more content and satisfied we have become. We hope you will take a leap of faith and join us on this journey to discovering God's vision for true love and lasting relationships. Chapter 3 Study Guide. Until we, as modern women, intentionally choose a Christ-centered approach, we will continue spinning in never-ending, nauseating circles. 1. Why is the modern method for relationships similar to a merry-go-round? 2. Fill in the blank. The goal of the merry-go-round method equals. What are some of the biggest problems you see with this goal? 3. What are the 5 steps? Step 1. Step 2. Step 3. Step 4. Step 5. Which of the 5 steps stands out to you the most? Why? 4. How have you seen the negative effects of the merry-go-round method play out in your own life or the life of someone you know? 5. In what ways does your current view of relationships need to change from being self-focused to more Christ-focused? Make it personal. Will you join us in jumping off the self-focused merry-go-round? If so, take a few minutes to say a personal prayer asking God to help you develop a more Christ-centered approach to love and relationships.
Part 2, Bringing Back True Love. Chapter 4, From Little Girl Crushes to Big Girl Relationships. By the time we hit our early 20s, we had each experienced heart-wrenching breakups. Remember Ryan and Justin? Yep, those guys. Our fairy tale dreams weren't exactly panning out. Cupid, did you have a slight misfire? Real life wasn't turning out the way either of us had always imagined. Instead of being married to our Prince Charmings by age 21, we both found ourselves painfully single. As our dreams melted away before our eyes, our trust in God was put to the test. We had no idea what the future held. We were both faced with the challenge to surrender our love lives to God. Looking back now, we both can clearly see how God used those breakups to do some serious renovation in our hearts. He used the heartache and pain to drive us to His truth. The two of us had no idea how profoundly God would use our breakups with Ryan and Justin as launching pads for our own spiritual growth. The next few years would prove to be crucial in our journey to understanding God-defined love. Now that you understand what the merry-go-round method looks like, see if you can spot some of the pitfalls in our individual relationship journeys. Like most girls, our journeys with love and romance started with butterflies and crushes at the local neighborhood playground.
Boy in jean shorts. I, Bethany, clearly remember my first crush. I was 9 years old when we met. Well, we actually never officially met. Now that I think about it, I don't even know his real name. Anyway, he was always hanging out at the playground my mom took me and my younger siblings to. He was such a heartthrob. My heart would flutter every time I saw him. But the thing that really caught my eye, his shorts. Yep, you heard that right. He wore the same pair of denim shorts every single day, and I adored it. After several weeks, Kristen and I gave him the genius nickname, Boy in Jean Shorts. I know, really smart. Since I was too scared to talk to Boy in Jean Shorts, I would sneakily stalk him on the playground, spying on him from the top of the jungle gym and secretly watching him on the swings. As a 9-year-old girl, I was already knee-deep in infatuation. I didn't know a lot about love at this point, but I knew this much. I liked this boy. Without being taught by anyone, my God-given, natural desire for romantic love was already budding.
Sparkly-haired dude. While Bethany was swooning over Boy in Jean Shorts, I, Kristen, was developing a more refined crush. Being a year and a half older, I was hitting double digits with my age. I was in the big leagues now. No more playground crushes for me. I had advanced to crushing on my older brother's friends. My latest crush was 3 years older than I was and played on my brother Michael's baseball team. Watching this cute boy run around the baseball field gave me butterflies. And the thing that really caught my eye, nope, not his shorts, it was his hair. Not only did he have amazing hair, he did something extra special to it. Instead of using plain old hair gel like all the other boys, my crush took it to the next level. He would put little silver sparkles inside his gel bottle to create a sparkly effect. When he doused his dark head with that special hair gel, ooh, baby, watch out. His hair actually sparkled as he ran around those bases. I was in love. Since appointing secret nicknames runs in my family, I gave him the endearing nickname Sparkly. I was totally and completely infatuated by him. As a young but very tall 10-and-a-half-year-old girl, I was already forming my own ideas about love. Without being formally taught by anyone, I started to believe true love was based primarily on feelings. And with that, the merry-go-round started turning in my heart.
Hello, high school. As the two of us grew older, our little girl crushes slowly turned into big girl crushes. Our early high school years brought with them a whole new set of questions and challenges. The magnetic pull and desire for love was still there, but was now intensified. Instead of spying on boys from the playground or watching baseball players run around the field, we were actually talking to guys face to face. Guys began noticing us and striking up conversations. They offered us attention in new and exhilarating ways. We quickly learned the art of subtle flirting, the Christian girl's way, and milked the attention for all it was worth. Even though we were both homeschooled, our city had a huge homeschool program with opportunities to participate in competitive sports. During our high school years, we both played varsity basketball, so we spent a lot of time at the courts. Guess who else spent a lot of time at the courts? Really tall, good-looking basketball dudes. Since the two of us are really tall, 6'1", we had a special eye for those tall guys. Between the two of us, our older brother, and our younger siblings, we spent a lot of time at various gyms watching games and practices. As a result, both of us met a lot of cute guys that way, too. I, Bethany, distinctly remember sitting in the stands during one of my siblings' games, just staring down at my crush. He was sitting 6 rows in front of me, but didn't realize I was behind him. I wanted him to notice me. So I did what any innocent Christian girl would do. I threw my shoe at him. Okay, I didn't throw it directly at him, but I threw it right next to him. Of course, like the gentleman he was, he picked it up and turned around to see where it came from. And there I was, acting innocently shocked that my shoe had fallen off.
I, Kristen, wasn't much better. Shortly after I got my driver's license, Bethany and I were heading home after one of our local basketball tournaments.
As we passed by some restaurants, I recognized one of the cars in the parking lot. "That's Derek's car!" I screamed out. I was crazy about this Derek guy.